Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, RFRA and the Contraceptive Mandate Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On May 16, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Zubik v. Burwell, the lead case in a consolidated series, with the other petitioners including Priests for Life, Southern Nazarene University, Geneva College, Roman Catholic Archbishop of Washington, East Texas Baptist University, and Little Sisters of the Poor, Home for the Aged. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010 requires that group health plans and health insurance insurers provide coverage for women's preventative care or face financial penalties. Although the ACA does not define preventative care, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, relying on the Institute of Medicine, determined that the term encompassed, among other things, all FDA-approved contraceptive methods, including drugs and devices that could induce an abortion. Federal regulations require petitioners to cover these contraceptives as part of their health plans, unless petitioners submit a form either to their insurer or to the federal government, stating that they object on religious grounds to providing contraceptive coverage. Petitioners resisted, asserting that submitting the notice substantially burdened the exercise of their religion in violation of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993. The ensuing litigation yielded different outcomes in different U.S. courts of appeals, and the Supreme Court granted certiorari. Following oral arguments, the court requested supplemental briefing from the parties addressing whether contraceptive coverage could be provided to petitioners' employees through petitioners' insurance companies without any such notice from petitioners. After receiving the supplemental briefs, the Supreme Court vacated the judgments of the courts of appeals by a vote of 8-0 and remanded the cases to the 3rd, 5th, 10th, and D.C. circuits, respectively. The court's per curiam opinion explained that the parties on remand should be afforded an opportunity to arrive at an approach going forward that accommodates petitioners' religious exercise while at the same time ensuring that women covered by petitioners' health plans receive full and equal health coverage, including contraceptive coverage. Furthermore, the court indicated it was expressing no view on the merits of the cases and stated that nothing in this opinion or in the opinions or orders of the courts below is to affect the ability of the government to ensure that women covered by petitioners' health plans obtain without cost the full range of FDA-approved contraceptives. At the same time, the court noted, throughout this litigation, petitioners had made the government aware of their view that they meet the requirements for exemption from the contraceptive coverage requirements on religious grounds, and nothing in the court's opinion, or in the opinions or orders of the courts below, precludes the government from relying on this notice, to the extent it considers it necessary to facilitate the provision of full contraceptive coverage going forward. And because the government may rely on this notice, the court indicated, the government may not impose taxes or penalties on petitioners for failure to provide the relevant notice. Justice Sotomayor issued a concurring opinion joined by Justice Ginsburg. To discuss the case, we have Roger Severino, who is director of the DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Severino.
This was a very interesting case that got more interesting over time with the unfortunate death of Justice Scalia. The calculus as to what would happen changed dramatically. We had interesting supplemental briefing and now a very fascinating per curiam opinion. So I'll take it in order. Coming out of Hobby Lobby, that decision where it was a 5-4 majority, it seemed as if the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was interpreted in such a way as to make the Little Sisters of the Poor case fairly clear that they were on solid ground and had strong arguments in favor of a victory on this go-around. With the loss of Justice Scalia, unfortunately, it threw it into a 4-4 split. It would have required one of the liberal justices to essentially flip their votes from Hobby Lobby in order to find in favor of the Little Sisters. It underscores just how important, for example, who's going to take Justice Scalia's spot is as an issue for our nation. So much hung in the balance, and once it was a 4-4 split, the question was, what is going to happen now if they do split? Coming up through the circuit courts, it was the 10th Circuit, 3rd, 5th, and D.C. Circuits, which ruled in favor of the government and against the petitioners, which included the Little Sisters of the Poor and various other religious nonprofits. And the 8th Circuit was a victory for religious freedom under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. That created the circuit split, and had it ended up being a 4-4 ruling, then the cases below would have stood as they were, which would have been bad for the Little Sisters of the Poor in particular, because there were so many circuit losses where the courts found that there was no substantial burden on the religious exercise of the petitioners. The actual merits of the case had to do with whether or not the Obama administration, through its HHS contraceptive mandate, which included required coverage of abortion-inducing drugs, could first go through the plans of religious institutions, and then under various alternate enforcement mechanisms, they provided what the administration considered accommodations, whether or not those alternate enforcement mechanisms still violated the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and imposed a substantial burden on objecting religious institutions. Now, mind you, these religious institutions cared not about women's contraceptive access per se. They cared about whether or not they would be complicit in providing and facilitating abortion-inducing drugs and devices and contraceptives. So the question was really, what is the mechanism? How much involvement is the government going to require of religious institutions when it comes to coverage of insurance for these devices? The background is that the government had already exempted religious institutions in their core functions, but parachurch organizations like the Little Sisters of the Poor, not directly governed by the Catholic Church directly, these religious nonprofits were not protected through a straight exemption. So the government was already dividing the line between who counts and who doesn't. And among those who didn't count, the enforcement mechanism required the Little Sisters and these other religious nonprofits to either A, file a form that actually became a plan instrument that directed their third-party administrators to provide the contraceptive coverage, or to provide a notice directly to HHS with detailed information regarding their plan name, along with the name and contact information of any of the third-party administrators and health insurance issuers. The government said, this is just the government acting. The Little Sister said, no, you're requiring of us to be an indispensable part in this machinery because you will be using us to facilitate you hijacking our own plans, our own health plans. And whatever you call it, it is essentially a shell game. The substance of the matter is you require the religious organizations to authorize their third-party administrators to provide this coverage under the law and in reality. Interestingly, though, during oral argument, much of the debate was over whether or not there was a workable solution to this conflict. It was, in fact, vintage Justice Breyer. So Justice Breyer is known for arguing proposing during oral argument that maybe the parties could just work it out and find a solution. And he often wonders out loud. And apparently other justices may have been wondering the same thing given the 4-4 split, because they ordered supplemental briefing to see if there was in fact a way that the government's interest of providing contraceptive coverage for free for employees could be furthered without requiring the petitioners and the Little Sisters of the Poor to do anything other than to purchase non-contraceptive coverage for their own employees. So is there a way where the government could act independently of the Little Sisters to still provide contraceptive coverage, and all effectively the Little Sisters would ever have to do is simply raise their hand and say, I don't want any part of it? And can it be truly separate? So that was the question the court asked supplemental briefing on. Now, that in itself is highly unusual to have supplemental briefing at this level. There have been many circuit cases that had touched on exactly the how the mechanism work. The federal government had every opportunity to think about creative ways of accommodating the sisters. And in fact, they changed their alternative mechanisms about 9 times by the time all was said and done. So they kept being pushed back, and kept falling back. But then they drew the line here that we need that notice. We need that notice in order to make the coverage flow. It is an indispensable part. And the Little Sister said, you can't have us do your dirty work effectively. Those were the issues at play. That's what came out in the supplemental briefing. the government made a crucial admission. They buried it in page 14, but they said that it was an actual feasible option, that they could, in fact, find a way to provide free contraceptive coverage to the employees of religious nonprofits with nothing more than having notice of some form that the religious nonprofit objects. That's it. No direction of the third-party administrator on the part of the Little Sisters, etc. Simply raise your hand, object, and the government admitted that it'll be able to somehow take care of the rest. Now, it hemmed and hawed, and it said, please don't force us to do all sorts of things that they didn't want to do to reach that result. But it made that admission, and the petitioners were very quick to point that out in the supplemental briefing. With those admissions came the per curiam opinion yesterday. It's short. It was read from the bench by the Chief Justice and had only two concurrences, and that was Ginsburg and Sotomayor. So interesting enough, you have Breyer and Kagan siding with all the conservatives and moderates without having to write separately. The substance of the opinion is also interesting. It doesn't really get into the merits at all. Now, I've heard some commentators say this is really just kicking a can down the road. It was some sort of a punt. And actually, I read two dueling news articles. You had one at the LA Times effectively saying this really didn't do much. It's going back to square one and contraceptive coverage is assured, which is the president's line. And on the other, you had the Wall Street Journal saying this was a great victory for the Little Sisters of the Poor and a slap for the administration. Those two are mutually exclusive positions, really. And I think, in my opinion, that the Little Sisters can rightly claim this was a big victory. And although the state of the law in terms of having a great, robust religious freedom opinion wasn't in the offing, and that was because of Justice Scalia's passing, so we didn't get that in the opinion. But what we did get was what happened on the ground. So coming into this, we had four circuit courts ruling against the petitioners, and the Little Sisters in particular were facing fines of up to $70 million per year. There was a court order requiring them to comply, and if they did not, and if they followed their conscience, they would have been hit with $70 million. That was hanging over their heads. It was stayed by the Supreme Court. What the Supreme Court did here is it vacated all the lower court's decisions. So as a matter of fact, imagine as if somebody's headed to the gallows and somebody issues a stay of execution, not only that, but a retrial. Most people would call that a great victory, that where something could have been very bad and in fact was ordered to be bad turned out to not exist anymore. And that's what vacating the opinion does. Those opinions are wiped out. And ones that had very narrow view of substantial burden under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So in terms of the effect on the law, although you don't get an affirmative opinion, it wipes away a lot of ones that really were eroding the interpretation of RFRA. So that's one thing to remember. The vacating is a very big deal, and that will affect other cases that are still working themselves up through the courts. And the second is, we covered it, the government admitted that it doesn't need the Little Sisters of the Poor and the other petitioners. It just doesn't need them to use that form. And it could find an alternate way of getting the contraceptive coverage. What that will look like in the end is why there was a remand as well, not just vacate. But they remanded it for the details to be worked out in the first instance at the bottom level. Now, some may argue, well, that still gives a chance for the administration to somehow find a way to find the Little Sisters out of compliance with the mandate and still impose something on a requirement on them to make sure that they are complicit and use their hijack their plans in some way or another. Well, they would take some real creativity, given how much briefing's been done, how many cases have gone up the chain, and the vacating of all those opinions. And I think the most important sentence in the entire per curiam opinion is the second to last. And it says, first, it says that the government has admitted that it will consider the Little Sisters of the Poor and the other petitioners as having properly objected to being required to provide contraceptive coverage through their insurance plans. So if we're talking about exemptions, protections, they've already raised their hand. And in fact, you might argue that a lawsuit is a strong form of an objection. And it really means that the requirement that they sign an additional form was never really needed as a matter of fact. I mean, that's just basic common sense. That they, in order to be notified, they didn't need that notice. They said they needed that notice in order to take the regulatory steps to take over the Little Sisters plan. Okay. The court actually said in the last sentence, and I'll quote, because the government may rely on this notice, the notice I just explained, the government may not impose taxes or penalties on petitioners for failure to provide the relevant notice. That means they do not face the $70 million per year fine. That sort of Damocles hanging over their head is gone. And the way I read this, it cannot be resurrected. This is not until the lower court holds otherwise. No, this is because the government may rely on this notice, the government may not impose these taxes. And because of that, I think it's fairly clear that the Little Sisters of the Poor are protected. The government would have to come up with something entirely new, which we have not seen before, to somehow try to reimpose that threat of the $70 million fine. So in terms of substance of the matter, it is a complete reprieve. So it's hard to call this somehow a victory for the government. I think that's just not the reality of it. They wanted to use the Little Sisters plans in the way they specified, give us this notice or else. And the court has said, no, you've gotten all the notice you're going to get, and you can't tax them for not doing anything more. You can't file a penalty to them for not doing what you want them to do. And so we see that the president's statement, and I'll quote his, he says, the practical effect is right now that women will still continue to be able to get contraception if they are getting health insurance. Which is a very interesting point because it has very little to do with the opinion. The actual per curiam opinion says that the government is still able to do what it was always able to do. It could always find an alternate way to provide health care coverage with contraceptives if it wanted to. So what this is saying is essentially that the government could have reached this position 5 years ago, but it chose not to. Is what this illustrates. They took the Little Sisters all the way up to the Supreme Court to fight for this signed statement, this notice, and now they cannot use that notice. They cannot force them to provide that notice. That is what was at issue. That was precisely the relief the Little Sisters wanted, and that's precisely the relief the Little Sisters got. And you can't really spin that as a victory for the administration. And by the way, and if it was really about contraceptive coverage through health insurance, then the administration would not have exempted one out of three Americans from the mandate and from the contraceptive coverage. So it's interesting that he would take that angle that somehow this is a victory for broad contraceptive coverage when one out of three are exempt for various reasons, and the administration has been okay with that for several years. I'll speak a little bit about the concurrence. Justices Sotomayor and Ginsburg, again, only two of them, go out of their way to say that this doesn't require the government to create a separate plan, such as like vision and dental plans. Most healthcare insurances can have these separate plans with a separate ID card where people can get it as they wish. One of the possible options that the petitioners offered was that, yes, if the government required insurers to do this separate plan with separate cards, so long as the Little Sisters and the other petitioners had nothing to do with it, nothing whatsoever, didn't fund it, didn't authorize it, didn't sign off on it, then they're okay with it. And that was effectively what they said would be a perfectly fine option. But Sotomayor, in her concurring opinion, said, well, that's actually not required by this order. Sure, it's not required by the order, correct. And is saying and tries to go into it and say that, in fact, it would pose an obstacle to women receiving contraceptive coverage. So that detail is going to be worked out at the lower court. Clearly, Ginsburg and Sotomayor say that that option would not be sufficient in their eyes. But again, they only got two votes on that question. So it really leaves the actual future structure of compliance if even if you call it compliance anymore, it's really going to be a question of how is the government going to provide free contraceptive coverage for people who object.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.